Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Yasoda Nandana Prajjana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Prajjana Ranjana. Amunatira Vanachari. Yamunatira Panachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jai Kishore Kishori ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki jai, Gornitai ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to Guru and Gauranga. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we are continuing Canto 10, Chapter 3, and the text for today is 33. So you can chant responsibly. This is on the board. Yavam vai brahmanadishtau. Praja sargeyada tataha. Saniyam yendriya gramam. Tepate paramam tapaham. Yau vai pramanadishtau. Praja sarge yada tataham. Saniyam yendriya gramam. Tepate paramam tapaham. Yovam vai brahmanandishtau. Praja sarge yado tataham. Samiyam yendriya gramam. Tepate paramam tapaha. Please chant. Yovam vai brahmanadishto. Praja sarge yada tataha. Maya indriya gramam. Tepate paramam tapaha. Yovam Vai Brahmanandishto Praja Sarge Yata Tataha Samiyam Yendriya Gramam Tepate Paramam Tapaha Yovam Vai Brahmanandishto Praja Sarge Yada Tataha Samiyam Yendriya Gramam Tepate Paramam Tapaha. The word for word Yovam. Both of you, Prishni and Sutapa, Vai, indeed, Brahmana Adishtal, ordered by Lord Brahma, who is known as Pitamaha, the father of the Prajapatis, Prajasarge, in the creation of progeny, yada, when, tata, thereafter, saniyamya, keeping under full control, indriyagramam, the senses, tepate, underwent, paramam, very great, tapaha, austerity. And the translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. When both of you were ordered by Lord Brahma to create progeny, you first underwent severe austerities by controlling your senses. The purport. Here is an instruction about how to use one's senses to create progeny. According to Vedic principles, before creating progeny, one must fully control the senses. This control takes place through the Garbhadhava Samskara. In India, there is great agitation for birth control in various mechanical ways, but birth cannot be mechanically controlled. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 39, Janma Mritya Jara Vyadhi Dukha Dashanam, birth, death, old age, and disease are certainly the primary distresses of the material world. People are trying to control birth, but they are not able to control death. And if one cannot control death, one cannot control birth either. In other words, artificially controlling birth is not any more feasible than artificially controlling death. According to Vedic civilization, procreation should not be contrary to religious principles, and then the birth rate will be controlled. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:11, Dharma virudo bhuteshu kamosmi. Sex not contrary to religious principles is a representation of the Supreme Lord. People should be educated in how to give birth to good children through samskaras, beginning with the Garbhadhana Samskara. Birth should not be controlled by artificial means, for this will lead to a civilization of animals. If one follows religious principles, he automatically practices birth control, because if one is spiritually educated, he knows that the after effects of sex are various types of misery. Bahudukha Bhaja. One who is spiritually advanced is not indulged in uncontrolled sex. Therefore, instead of being forced to refrain from sex or refrain from giving birth to many children, people should be spiritually educated and their birth control will automatically follow. If one is determined to make spiritual advancement, he will not beget a child unless able to make that child a devotee. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18. Itanasya, one should not become a father unless one is able to protect his child from mrityu, the path of birth and death. But where is their education about this? A responsible father never begets children like cats and dogs. Instead of being encouraged to adopt artificial means of birth control, people should be educated in Krishna consciousness, because only then will they understand their responsibility to their children. If one can beget children who will be devotees and be taught to turn aside from the path of birth and death, mrityu samsara vatmani, there is no need of birth control. Rather, one should be encouraged to beget children. Artificial means of birth control have no value. Whether one begets children or does not, a population of men who are like cats and dogs will never make human society happy. It is therefore necessary for people to be educated spiritually, so that instead of begetting children like cats and dogs, they will undergo austerities to produce devotees. This will make their lives successful. Om Gyanatimrandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamnam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padao Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramanmi Hari Priye Vajrakalpataribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaham. Namo Vishnu Panaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimata Ramapada Swami Tinamine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimata Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Okay. So this verse is pointing to austerities that were performed. So this verse is pointing to austerities that were performed by Vasudeva and Devaki in a previous lifetime when they were Prishni and Sutapa. And the nature of the austerities that were performed by them is explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Sarita Darshana commentary on this particular verse. So their austerities, or their austere practices, took the form of constant meditation on the Lord with devotion and faith. Now it's interesting to note that constant meditation on the Lord is actually explained by Lord Krishna in three verses in the Bhagavad Gita. And the beginning of those three verses, Lord Krishna explains how the huge material creation is resting on him. So we find that in Bhagavad Gita 9:6. So he gives an example. So this is the beginning of that like constant meditation that Prishni and Sutapa were practicing. So this is how Krishna tries to explain the beginning of that constant meditation. He says, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So in the vast sky, which is perhaps the greatest space that one can conceive of, there is a wind that's within that vast sky, or that vast expanse, and the wind is able to influence the movement of everything. So, you know, one may walk out and see that the tree is waving its branches, or one may see that, you know, leaves are being fluttering along the street. So the wind is influencing everything in terms of it creating movement. but despite this great ability that the wind has to create the movement in everything, or affecting things in that kind of way, it's still contained within the sky. Now, it means that it's not outside of the space that's provided by the sky. Now, in an analogous manner, the cosmic manifestation is existing subordinate or under the purview of the will of the Supreme Lord. So it's that analogy is there to help one understand how his will is creating movement in everything. So it's within the constraints of his will that everything is taking place. So this kind of meditation, it's expressed by Prishni in her current lifetime as Devaki. So this is how she describes it. You are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation, Adyam. That's the word for that particular statement. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. So this was in a previous verse, in the 24th verse. So it's very interesting because here we are presented with Vasudeva and Devaki, and by what she's saying, we are understanding the meditation that preceded the current situation in a different lifetime. Because we know that any advancement stays with one. So what is being expressed now is coming from a whole previous lifetime of meditation. And we can see the connection with Krishna explaining how this constant meditation, what form it takes. So she is understanding, meaning Devaki's understanding, that there's an original substance, and that is the all-pervading Lord, Vishnu, and that all beings are part and parcel of Lord Vishnu. So that's included in that. and the meditation by Lord Krishna, or his pointing to this constant meditation, he adds this part, this is Krishna talking, he says, please understand that just as the wind situated in the ether goes everywhere, by my will alone, so all beings are supported and maintained by me alone. So it's a very subtle thing. You know, when one sees moving leaves or moving branches, or you know, experiences a gush of wind coming through a window, one may not be thinking that even that wind is contained within the space of the sky. So in the same way, it requires constant meditation to come to understand that there's a will, or the Lord's will, that's behind the existence of different living entities and how everything is moving forward. So Krishna, in fact, he's adding to this constant meditation. So I'm finding this very fascinating, so I'm going into it. So he says, These are his words. O son of Kunti, Krishna talking Bhagavad Gita, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I restore them again. So this is Bhagavad Gita 9:7. So the meditation is that everything that's even getting created, everything that's been maintained, and everything that's been destroyed in this material cosmic manifestation is completely dependent on the will of the Supreme Lord. So the invisible factor behind that requires the meditation to come to the understanding. So in the same way that the great air within this vast ether, it cannot support itself. And also even that great ether, the great sky, it can't support itself. So even though the wind is supposedly freely moving, it's not actually able to support itself. It has to be within the sky. And even then, because both the ether, the vast sky, and that wind that appears so free moving everywhere, it lacks a supporting power. So both the air and the ether within which it moves are enabled by the will of the Supreme Lord. And that movement is actually permitted by Paramatma, because we know from the creation that Shiradakshaya Vishnu enters into each and every atom. So it's actually still by his will that the movement of air is permitted, or that the sky is supported. And there's a quote from Srila Baladev Vidyabhu's son, where he's commenting in Bhagavad, in this verse of Bhagavad Gita that I've read, that at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nation. At the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. And he says that in the Taittiriya Upanishad, there's a particular little verse which says, out of fear of the Lord, the wind blows. So there's that movement that appears so free, it's actually impelled by awareness of the Supreme Lord. So even the wind is moving out of fear of the Supreme Lord. So just as this air exists and moves in the ether by his will, so too all beings are situated in him. They're maintained and controlled by his will alone, while he's not affected. So the meditation extends to all beings entering his prakriti, his material nature, by his will. And at the time of Brahma's death, they merge into him again, so meaning Lord Vishnu, who's the cause of that prakriti or that material nature. So you can see this is a quite a vast kind of concept, and a very subtle one. I'm spending time on it because these Vasudeva and Devaki are two entities that understood this and had spent 12,000 years, celestial years, meditating in this kind of way. So I'm proceeding with it just to understand how their thinking is. So the maintenance of all beings takes place by the will of the Lord alone. Indeed, he creates and he destroys all entities. So this constant meditation is evident in Vasudev's statements. And much earlier on, this is how Vasudev put it. O Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world. So he's actually seen Lord Vishnu and he's addressing him. So he says, O Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by your personal external energy. After the creation of this world of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. So that was in the 14th verse of the same chapter. And so that's some evidence of Vasudev's meditation that's coming from previous lifetime. And here's Devaki speaking. And this is also indicating something of her meditation. So it's cultivating over all this time, this understanding, and she's expressing it. At the time of devastation, the entire cosmos containing all created moving and non-moving entities enters your transcendental body and is held there without difficulty. So when devastation takes place, that energy that's manifested by the Supreme Lord, it's again wound up into himself. And this takes place after 100 of Lord Brahma's years. So if one considers that one day of Lord Brahma is 4,300 million years, and his night is of the same duration, and then that's multiplied by 12. So 12 months of such days and nights, or 4,300 million years, by at least our years. So it's 100 of that kind of multiplication of Brahma's lifetime that there's the existence before the annihilation. And so all the Lord has to do is expand himself again, and the whole cosmic manifestation begins again. So it's very, you can understand with our very short lifespans, our very limited intelligence, our very finite concepts that we hold, it's kind of difficult to comprehend this. It really requires a lot of constant meditation. And it would still be a little difficult, but this is something of these two extraordinary beings that we're reading about here. This is how they've been meditating for 12,000 of celestial years. So the relative amount of time that they were meditating is quite short in comparison even to the one day of Lord Brahma. So if you take that 4,300 million years and they meditated for 12,000 years. So it's relatively short, but still 12,000 years, celestial years, is a very long time. So the Lord is transforming that material nature, the Prakriti, into Mahatattva and the other elements. I recall discussing this in a previous class, and this is all taking place by his will, as he's desiring. And so he comes to create four different kinds of bodies when that Mahatattva is breaking down into different forms. And so those are the devas, the humans, the animals, and the plants. So those are the four categories that that division of Mahatattva, when it's taking form, manifests as. So Krishna states, and this is his, again, explaining this constant meditation that we're hearing took place in this previous lifetime. He says, the whole cosmic order is under me alone. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So by his inferior energy, the material energy is let loose as Mahatattva, And into that Mahavishnu enters, and he lies on the causal ocean. So this devotion and faith that Devaki and Vasudev had instilled or infused into their meditation is such that they're expressing their understanding, because this understanding can't come without having had the devotion and the faith. So this is Devaki speaking after millions of years, and I'm echoing because it's so connected to Krishna's explanation of constant meditation. So when I'm seeing the parallel very clearly, so that's why I'm expressing how Krishna's expressing it and then how these devotees are expressing it. So here's Devaki speaking. After millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain and are known as Ananta Shesha. It was from the 25th verse. So that the different species are living beings are created immediately along with the universe. This follows on that destruction of the cosmic manifestation when it enters into the spiritual energy of the Lord and him remaining alone as the origin of everything. And how he actually comes to create these bodies is according to the power of the impressions of the particular soul's karmas. So that's how the bodies come to be created. There's already impressions on the subtle plane that are contained within the material energy, and then they come to manifest the forms, or Lord Vishnu allows those forms to then manifest themselves according to those impressions. So it's a bit like, I guess, having a blueprint of a building that's going to be created, and you see architectural drawings and then you actually see the building. So at first it's like just the sketch or the breakdown and the measurements, and then you see the big actual concrete blocks and the windows and the full structure according to those dimensions that previously were just on paper. So it's something like that. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he particularly looks at three words that are used that highlight what, how this meditation of Devaki and Vasudev actually was in their previous lifetime. So these were the important words that he looks at, which indicates the devotion of Prishni and Sutapa. And why this is important is that they weren't merely doing some sort of yoga, some sort of yogic practice. So these are the words that he points to. And it's coming up, we haven't got there yet, but the words are tapasya, shradaya, nityam, bhakta, chahirdi, bhavita. And Krishna is also using such descriptive words. We heard tapasya, so austerity, shradaya, with faith, and nityam, eternal. So Krishna puts it this way. So I'm drawing the parallel again. O sinless mother, Devaki, after the expiration of 12,000 years, this will be him talking in the current time, addressing his mother and father. O sinless mother Devaki, after the expiration of 12,000 celestial years in which you constantly contemplated me within the core of your heart with great faith, devotion, and austerity, I was very much satisfied with you. So Krishna's acknowledging the meditation they performed in their previous lifetime. And this will be coming up in the 38th verse. So their devotion, it shows total absorption in the Lord. Shraddha, that's mentioned, their faith. Nityam, being constantly engaged. And Bhaktya, by devotional service. So this is very important to understand, because we'll come to read something of their practices, and it's important now to make this distinction between it being just a yogic practice versus a deeply devotional bhakti practice that they were engaged in. And this total absorption that they had, Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur states, leads to perfection and prema. And indeed, in Nectar of Devotion, we find that one of the principles of devotional service, namely to inquire about eternal religious principles, it becomes evident in the following way. This is Nectar of Devotion. If one is actually very serious about devotional service, then all of the purposes will be served without any delay. And indeed, we find that this is what takes place with Vasudeva and Devaki. Their purpose for their meditation was to beget a child exactly like Krishna. So, and we find that their meditation was actually filled with bhava, or transcendental love. And through this genuine devotion for the Lord, they came to have the Lord be very pleased with them. And so indeed he appeared in his four-handed form. Because their whole meditation, as one's reading, the creation, the destruction, it's Lord Vishnu. And he appeared in that form, Lord Vishnu, the four-handed form. So Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, he comments that the devotion of Prishni and Satapa was mixed with jnana and aishvarya. So there was knowledge and a sense of the magnificence of the Lord, or the controlling aspect of the Lord. And because of this, they practiced yoga and severe austerities. I mean, we'll come to read that all that they would eat were dry leaves that had fallen from the tree. So, one can go and pick something. They weren't even picking things. That's how control, whatever fell, that was picked up and was dry. So this was, their austerity took the form of controlling their senses through controlling their eating, and this eating only of dried leaves that had fallen from the trees. And they also endured bodily discomforts. So naturally, those that would take the form of being outside and enduring rain, the strong sun, and severe cold. So that's usually a yogic practice. Whether it's a yogi who chooses to be submerged in ice-cold water in the Himalayas, in their case, they just endured those elements as well. We hear that they endured the rain, the strong sun, the severe cold. So this yogic practice that, I guess, accompanied the faith in the Lord, this constant meditation that I've described on Lord Vishnu, it actually meant that they were closing all the doors connected to sense gratification. So any sensual enjoyment was completely blocked. And usually the yogic situation is one that there comes to be a detachment from all sensual engagement. So that's a yogic practice. So they were showing that through how they performed their meditation on the Lord. And while they closed the doors to all sensual engagement, they also had this constant meditation that I've spent a long time describing. They fixed in their mind, within their heart, this form of Lord Vishnu and the meditation on his creating, his controlling, his annihilating. And they also fixed their life air at the top of the head. And this is the description that we find in Bhagavad Gita in 8:13. I'm going to read it. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagement, closing all doors of the senses and fixing his mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head. One establishes oneself in yoga. So this is actually their practice. I mean, we're reading it in Bhagavad Gita, but this is actually what they were doing. Now, there's a second principle of devotion that's highlighted in Nectar of Devotion, and that is of being able to give up anything material for the satisfaction of Krishna. And here, they gave up bodily comforts. And Nectar of Devotion, if that principle is followed, it becomes evident that it was followed because all the opulences of Vaikuntha await one. So we see that this indeed has now become the reality of Devaki and Vasudev. Indeed, the opulences of Vaikuntha are awaiting them. They come to have Lord Vishnu personally present. They're conducting their conversation with Lord Vishnu. At the same time, Vasudev and Devaki had developed genuine love for the Supreme Lord, genuine devotion for him. So this is a little unusual for us to hear because we know it's not practical in the present time, and rather we taught that our closing the doors of sensual enjoyment has to do with redirecting the senses in acts of devotion. So the yogic practice or that severe austerity practice is not there. Rather, the austerity is redirecting the senses and utilizing them in acts of devotion to the Supreme Lord. So and the reason for that, of course, is much more practical in the present time. I mean, taking into account our extremely short lifespan, I mean, 12,000 celestial years of constant meditation versus our simple 100 human years to be able to try and develop genuine devotion for the Supreme Lord. So clearly not a practical process in the present time, but I've gone into all of this because it's interesting to understand who Devaki and Vasudev are and how they've actually come to this point. So there, this principle of Nectar of Devotion that one be able to give up anything material for the satisfaction of Krishna, we find that in their case, they were internally worshipping the Supreme Lord and they were practicing celibacy. So this is extremely important because it's part of the austerity of the body. And we find this again, Bhagavad Gita 17:14, where the austerity of the body, which in their case was offering respect to Lord Vishnu and respect to the spiritual master, because after all we find that they hadn't undertaken the austerity that's mentioned in this verse After accepting Brahma's instruction to them to create progeny, so that we can see there's austerity of the body and they're offering respects to the spiritual master, Lord Brahma. So this practice of celibacy was such that they cleansed all internal dirt from the heart. And for them, because of their meditation and austerities, the Lord became very pleased to appear in his four-handed form. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada has just looked at it in the current time, and I've taken this step back and tried to see the whole picture, and because I thought Srila Prabhupada's purport just put it so clearly, there was very little I could say. It was so clear in the present time how it applies. So I've just tried to take more the overview of where Devaki and Vasudev are situated and how they came to be at this point where the Lord was so pleased with them. So I'll stop there. If there's any thought on this subject matter.
Hare Krishna Matsuji, thank you for your class. I don't know if I usually let somebody else to go because I don't have time to gather my thoughts. While my writing is pretty sporadic, so please forgive me if it's... you were mentioning at your last point celibacy, and this whole topic was Prabhupada was mentioning birth control, etc., so many things. So sometimes when you come to the temple and you hear, you know, these topics, you may get the interpretation, or sometimes maybe devotees make you feel, if you use birth control, if you're not celibate, then leave our temple. We only allow pure persons to come in, but there's one quote by Jesus. He says, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. A hospital is meant for the sick, so the more sick you are, you should come to the temple. But one of my points I wanted to make was something very powerful that His Holiness Radhananda Maharaj made concerning the opulence of Krishna, particularly wealth. There's many types of wealth. Krishna has six type of wealth, including renunciation. But one thing Radhananda Maharaj mentioned, he was given sannyas initiation to Amala Bhakta Maharaj. And he said, Srila Prabhupada was once asked by a devotee for permission to renounce everything. Srila Prabhupada's response was, Krishna owns everything, so what do you have to renounce? The only thing you have to renounce is the misconception that you have something to renounce. Everyone's broke, so there's no question of first class, second class. In much the same way, one of the opulences of Krishna is knowledge is a type of wealth, fame is a type of wealth, including renunciation and purity. So if we don't have any money to our name, that means we don't have any purity in our name. And one pastime I like in this regard is Sobari Muni. He was a mystic yogi meditating in the water for thousands of years. The only association he had was fish and whales. He wasn't distracted by any women. He was considered celibate. But one day, Garuda came in the water and ate some fish. Swooped into the water and ate some fish. And he criticized Garuda. He says, you know, you're supposed to be a Vaishnava. I know you're ego, and I know you're Lord Vishnu's bird carrier, but still, you should be a... You know, we have sabji, nice chapatis. Why are you eating fish? And so he told Garuda, if you come and eat these fish again, then I'll kill you. And because of this aparad, this offense, the Supreme Lord inspired lust within his heart. When he saw two fish mating, he became lusty, wanted to come out of water and marry 50 women and had many kids. So the direction I'm going is that what are some steps we could do to give up this this upadi, this false designation that we have money, that we have knowledge, that we have purity. Sarvapadi Vinamutam Tapada Dwena Nimralam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ushate. This verse says the Lord is Hrishikesha. He's the control of our senses. So my understanding is that even if we could control our senses, we shouldn't become so proud, nor if we can't control our senses, we shouldn't become so discouraged, because we're not the control of our senses. And the only thing we should do is try our best, because sometimes the brahmanas, they perform all the gabhardhan samskars, they have perfect astrology, And so they had the ideal that because I'm pure, I perform all the Garbhadhan samskaras, I'm able to spread Krishna consciousness more than someone who hasn't. But we see that Srila Prabhupada's disciples did more to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world than any Indian throughout the entire world. That's why Lord Chaitanya told Ramananda Roy, Shreya Madhe Kona Shreya Jivada Hoi Sa Krishna Bhatta Sangha Vina Shreya Nahyar. The most important principle is not your astrology, not your samskars, but sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva sashakor, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi ho. The most important association is the devotee association, because they'll tell you that there's greatness within everyone. There's a quote that says, surround yourself with the dreamers and the doers, the believers and the thinkers, but most of all, surround yourself with those who see the greatness within you, even when you don't see it in yourself. So what are some steps we can move forward to give up this criticism that just because you don't have, you know, so many opulence, including the opulence of purity, you can't do great things? One last point I want to make. In the Bhagavatam, I'll just mention this last point, maybe you can elaborate on it. In the first canto, chapter 11, verse 19, Prabhupada glorifies prostitutes. He says prostitutes can even be unalloyed devotees. You know, sometimes by tricks of trade, he says, sometimes people are forced to become prostitutes throughout their whole life. But that doesn't take away the fact that they're unalloyed devotees. So there seems to be some contradictions. So that's kind of my question. What are some steps we can move forward to give up this upadi, that we have money, that we have purity, and etc. So anyway, like I said, I don't have any control over my notes or thoughts, but maybe you could extract some of the stuff that I said. So.
So what I'm understanding is, you looked at the idea that a person can have the idea that they have purity, but then because of having that idea, it could very easily be subverted by the Lord's will. And you gave the example of Subari Muni. And and then the other aspect that you looked at was, you know, the possession, thinking that one has wealth. but I take it by implication that you're suggesting it would also be taken by the Lord's will, or he could do as he pleases. So your question was, how not to have this concept that one is pure or that one has wealth. I take it you're understanding that that's not so conducive to developing devotion if one's holding such a concept, and that's why you're asking the question. well, purity. His Holiness Ramaphosa Swami has used the word a notion of, so one can have a notion of purity. Wealth, that's factual and measurable, I guess, but purity is a much more subtle concept, and it's also something that is has to do with going, is something that's achieved through following a process. So wealth may be achieved through following a process of working and consistently working and saving, I don't know, something like that. And if it's also karmically permitted, one may accumulate perhaps, and then one can call it wealth. In the case of purity, the following of the process involves working too, and that work is the work of meditating on the Supreme Lord. So it may not be in the form of Prishni and Sutapa, still, it may be much simpler. It may be just meditating on doing very nicely the particular act of devotion that one's going to perform. So if you're going to perform the act of devotion of presenting a question in the class, so you're going to naturally think how to do it nicely and, you know, collect your categories of thought and bring in your various quotes because you're trying to present something, a question in the class. So that can be an act of devotion. You've heard something, and so you actually are reciprocating with the speaker by trying to pose a nice question or put thoughts together and present it. So that's a kind of work, and one does it consistently. So that's following the process that one is hearing, consistently hearing. You're coming to the Bhagavatam class, you're hearing, you're chanting. So you're following the process of devotion. You're doing that work that's going to actually lead to purity. So in the same way that the work of material wealth requires that physical toiling and the accumulation of factual dollars in a bank, here you're actually doing the work that's connected to the process that's recommended. So you're hearing, you're chanting, and the effect of that, what you're accumulating, is transcendental piety. That transcendental piety is replacing what is stored in the mind and the heart. So for the materialist accumulating the wealth, they have to perhaps buy a vault that now they're going to store their precious jewelry in, their huge amount of cash. They may buy a vault and store it there. So an empty vault then gets filled up with that kind of wealth, the physical wealth, the jewelry, the dollars. In our particular case, the mind and the heart, it's already full of things. By performing the work that goes along with the process of devotion to the Supreme Lord, our vault, our heart, is actually getting cleansed. It's that garbage that's there on, you know, angry thoughts, lustful thoughts, greedy thoughts, accumulated tendencies. All of that is actually dissolving through the transcendental piety entering. So the how-to part is continuing. Continuing and continuing and continuing, just as the materialist continues to add to the vault, one continues to add transcendental piety that is dissolving the garbage. There's the space is becoming clean and pure. So it's not filled with, you know, physical jewels or physical dollars. It's filled with, it starts to get filled with devotional sentiments. Sentiments towards the Supreme Lord, and also devotional sentiments to devotees. So one comes to a point where actually the what is emitting from the heart is transcendental love. So that physical vault, there may be shining jewels that emit some light. Over here, the heart is starts to become so pure, it's emanating transcendental light. you know, love for the Supreme Lord. So it's just with great determination, continuing and continuing and continuing. So the step is not so much a step, but planting of one's feet and continuing. At no point stepping away from the process, just continuing. Because the result will be there, that shining light, you know, the love for the Supreme Lord, the purity of one's vault, the heart, will be the result.
Well, thank you for the class. So my question was that, like, one may not specifically know who Krishna is, but they might just meditate on the universal God, and will then he not reciprocate accordingly, and then will he not, like Devaki and Vasudev in their last birth, they did all these austerities and finally got the, and they begot Krishna. So similarly, like if somebody does penances and with the object of just like getting divine love, will then God not reciprocate accordingly, and not reciprocate if he doesn't know them by the name of Vishnu or the four-armed Vishnu, but then will he not manifest himself in some or the other form which may not have been narrated or written?
So the question is, so Devaki and Vasudev were meditating on Lord Vishnu, and so he may have manifested that way. They were also performing austerities and penances. So the question is, if one's performing austerities and penances, and I didn't quite hear what the objective of this penances and austerities were, because you mentioned I didn't catch, but could it be that the Lord manifests in some form that isn't written about? That's the question. Well, the Lord has certainly innumerable incarnations, and there are particular planets where each of those incarnations resides. So someone may find Lord Nisrimadev extremely attractive and may meditate on Lord Nisrimadev. Someone else may be drawn to Lord Ramachandra and may meditate on Lord Ramachandra. So those are just two examples of incarnations of Lord Krishna, and they factually exist in the spiritual world, and they factually have their particular planets and their particular devotees. So it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that who one meditates on, or the form that one meditates on, one goes to that place. So that would be the result of one's meditation. Not so much that the Lord factually appears in that incarnation before one. That was the case with Devaki and Vasudev, because their desire had been to specifically have him as their child. But if one's meditating on a particular form of the Lord, then one can actually go to the Lord in that particular planet, in the spiritual sky. So that would be my understanding of how it could work. So not necessarily that he's appearing to one, or he may appear within one's heart, certainly, but at least the... upon the soul's departure from this body, it can go to that planet of that particular incarnation of the Lord.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.